Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Frost. Have you thought about trying a new discipline that you haven't had a go at riding before? Or maybe you've never been riding, you listen to the Horse Hour podcast and you think, you know, I'd really love to get into horses. Well, today we're talking about the Wobbleberry Challenge, which is how you can get involved with the horse industry. And my guest is Indra Morris. This is Horse Hour. Welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. Today my guest is Indra Morris. She's the Director General for Children's Social Care, Social Mobility and Disadvantage at the Department of Education. How are you, Indra?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm really good, thank you. It's really lovely to meet you because you've, by the sounds of it, been listening to the podcast for a while, and we've spoken on Facebook and Twitter and had some conversations, and it's really lovely to hear that you love horses so much and that you'd agreed to be a guest on the show. When we last spoke last year, I think you were kind enough to send me some photos of your horse because you've got quite an unusual breed, haven't you?
Yes, I sent you some photos of Oscar, who's a Henson horse, which most people, myself included, until I got him, had never heard of, and he's a French breed.
Right, and he looks, I'll post another photo today while you're listening so that you can see what he looks like. Can you tell us a little bit more about the Henson?
Yeah, they're all done, and they're bred in the Somme in Normandy in the north of France, and they were basically bred using Norwegian fjords and French sort of saddle horses, and they're really versatile. You know, they live out on the Bay of Somme, and every year they do a drift to bring them in. They drive, they do polo cross, they're riding. They're quite feisty, quite strong characters. And one day I'm hoping to actually get to go and see where Oscar grew up.
Oh, wow. How did you end up having Oscar? How did he end up in your care?
Well, I was looking for my first horse, actually. I started riding when I was about 41, I think, and very quickly realised that just going to a riding school every week and being handed a horse that was already tacked up and then handing it back at the end of, you know, half an hour or so was just not enough, really. So I set out that sort of rather, as I discovered later, kind of complicated and never straightforward search for a horse.
It's never easy, is it?
No, and I didn't know at the time until much later that poor Oscar had sort of come over as a four-year-old, but then had sort of about five homes in 5 years. It had all sort of unravelled for him a bit, really. And me, in my blissful ignorance, sort of came along and sort of fell in love with him, and that was it. So he's taught me a lot.
And what do you do with Oscar?
Well, Oscar at the moment is actually on sort of rest because he did his collateral ligament last summer. I also basically retired him to hacking a few years ago, which was then when I got my other horse, Bob, because he's got arthritis in his neck and he's got all sorts of issues. He loves hacking, but I think the first couple of years I had him, I was trying to do things with him that actually, like dressage and jumping and schooling, that actually he really didn't enjoy, and actually in hindsight he probably didn't enjoy it partly for sort of physical reasons as well as kind of how he is.
That's really interesting. Do you think that was an element of his breeding, that his breeding, because like I said, I don't know much about the Henson, but I just think, you know, sometimes we've got draft horses, people want to do dressage with Clydesdales, and you can do all those things because I don't believe that you can't do anything that you want to have a go at, providing the horse is healthy enough. But it's maybe some particular breeds find it a bit easier than others.
think there's something in that. I think there's also, it turned out for a while he'd been at a riding school. They'd had to sell him because he was a bit naughty. I just never take him in school because I think even now, you know, you can sort of feel him going, oh, mm-hmm. you know. So I think there's also something about temperament and, you know, what some horses enjoy. You know, Bob has a real, you know, he enjoys training, he enjoys schooling. He's got work ethic, but he's also, you know, physically fit and strong. And, you know, Oscar's clearly been carrying some issues on and off for years, really.
Oh, bless him. It's funny you should say that because my horse Blackjack is a Friesian cross Gelderlander. Perfectly fine. He should be able to do dressage and be in the school. We know he's got an injury, but he's recovered from that. But he just gets bored in the school. But I can do exactly the same work out in the forest and his ears are forward and he's energetic and excited. So there's nothing to do with his breed. It's just his personality says, nah, you know what? It's not for me. Thanks.
Although I think I'm probably more up for it in the forest and in the field as well. So sometimes it's a bit of us, isn't it, as well?
So notoriously then, what are Hensons bred for?
They do a lot of driving. I've got some lovely photos of him when he was four at Windsor Park driving. He polo cross as well, but also they do a lot of riding, written work. But I think driving and polo cross seems to be the thing that in France in particular they use them for.
So is he quite heavy set then?
He's sort of cobby, but with a non-cobby head. It's kind of quite hard to... But yeah, he's got a big barrel of a chest.
Mm.
And he's quite a bruiser. But he's a beautiful bruiser to me, obviously.
Yeah. Going from Henson then to Bob, what type of breed is Bob?
Bob is an Irish skewbald. He's a 14-3... I confess, I nearly didn't go and see him because having got a slight cobby type with Oscar, I thought, oh, you know, if I'm going to get a horse to lunge jump and compete on, I'll perhaps go down a different route. But having had the experience of Oscar and feeling, to be frank, that I didn't have the whole picture when I bought him, I decided that I wasn't going to buy through adverts. I would only buy from either people I trusted or who were trusted by people I trusted.
Mm.
And so when Bob came up, my trainer recommended that I go and see him and my friend, who's really experienced and also knew the seller. She's very experienced, former sort of top level, you know, high level show jumper. And she said she'd come with me. So I went, not expecting, and he was actually the first horse I went to see, and that was it. I think I had him vetted the next day, and he was home within, you know, 36 hours. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
What was it about him that made you fall in love straight away?
I think there was something about feeling. I mean, I popped a little jump on him. I hacked him on my own. It wasn't entirely straightforward. At one point in the school, he did slightly tank off with me, but it felt that he was responding to me tensing rather than trying to run away from me. It felt like a miscommunication. And I just really liked him and I felt very comfortable on him. And he was very forward going in a way that Oscar isn't. But give the fella credit. I mean, they did say to me, you know, is he too much? You know, do you think he'll be too much for you? Mm. And I think if I'd just been taking him home and having him in a field and trying to do it all on my own, that's probably would have been the case. But I have regular lessons and, you know, I'm not afraid to ask for help. And I just, you know, it's been 3 years, or I think it might be 4 years this September. And I just love him to bits. And he's just, we've done so much together. Things I never would have dreamed of. So I'm incredibly lucky.
It's amazing. It's so lovely to see you talk about him because I can see in your face there's just love for him and it's excitement. You come alive. you've been part of the Wobbleberry Challenge, haven't you? Has that contributed to the exciting things that you've done with Bob?
Definitely. I got a message from a friend, Nicola, who I met through eventing and through grooming and volunteering, and her daughter competes, and we'd met in the lorry park or online or something. Anyway, and she messaged me saying, look, there's this Wobbleberry Challenge, which was in memory and honour of Hannah Francis, who set up the Wilbury charity before she died, and it's basically sort of middle-aged wimpy riders training to do our first British eventing competition, and which I fence judged and volunteered, and I groomed friends, and never really thought of even having a go at eventing myself, but I knew I wanted to learn to jump and I wanted to try some cross country. So I thought I can, you know, use this to sort of motivate me and raise some money for Wilbury in the process. So yeah, it's been a slow, long road, but we're raising lots of money, having some amazing experiences and lots of fun and adventures with Bob. Quite a few tears on the way as well. It's not, you know, it's never, is it, with horses are straightforward, and yeah, comfort zone is never straightforward, but yeah, I've been enormously lucky.
Yeah, and you've done great things, haven't you? Can you share some of them with us?
We're doing a sort of 60 centimeters jump wise, but we've done our first British dressage and he came third, and I was really chuffed with that. We went double clear at Munster in their one day event last year, having been eliminated at fence for the year before, so that was really good.
Well,
we're still taking it slow and steady, and we've done some trek together, but also I also make sure we hack at least once a week. I'm incredibly lucky with hacking here in Kent, and we've got a combined training at Munster coming up at the beginning of March, and then we're going off to Firle to do our first hunter trial there, which
oh
I'm really
goodness.
Excited about. Beautiful venue, and I've groomed there for friends, and I think this is the first year they're doing a 60 class, so I'm putting my brave pants on, as they say, and try a new venue.
Yeah, well, I hope the weather clears up for you by then, so that it's not, it's easier to try new things in a nice sunny warm day with no wind, I feel. But when you decided to take part in this Wobbleberry Challenge, which it's an ongoing thing, isn't it? It's about building confidence between you and your horse and socialising, meeting new people, because we're not all brave. We don't all have confidence. I certainly don't have any confidence at all. And I look at riders and think, gosh, I'd love to be as brave as that. So I think the Wobbleberry Challenge is great for building a community, really, to support each other through this. So when you first joined, can you tell us the steps of how you joined and how it all works?
Well, it's really lovely because it's also developed. As I said, it sort of started off with a focus on eventing, which is what Hannah's passion was. But it's developed, so there's 7 goals for 2020, which is how one of the Wobbleberry focuses for this year. So breaking it down and doing kind of smaller steps for people to focus on. You know, when we first registered, we got our starter packs and we networked with other people in our areas. And I remember going off to a pub on the, you know, corner of a roundabout on a dark night in Kent, meeting some women I'd never met before, and formed really lovely friendships. And, you know, Angela, who I met there that night, you know, for her it was about getting back on a horse after years and years of not riding at all. Mm. And she's been part of the Wibbly Wobbly group, which is the sort of, you know, another supportive Facebook group that has sort of sprung from that. So it's been this amazingly encouraging, supportive. Some people have graduated by having completed their eventing and never want to do it again. You know, others have got the bug. For other people, it's, you know, it's that confidence, it's being supported, it's, you know, trying new things. And it's just been lovely, really inclusive and supportive, and all, you know, focused on raising money for Wilbury. And I think it's over £300,000 so far, actually. And
wow,
you know, riding for Hannah is still at the sort of core of it.
Mm. How do you raise money at the same time? Do you get like sponsorship for doing particular events, or how does it work?
Well, everybody's doing it a bit differently. Some people are being incredibly creative and doing events or photo competitions or bakes, or I'm a lot less imaginative. So we've all got Just Giving pages, which are linked, sort of team pages that are linked to the sort of central funds. So it's all clear where the money is going and how much we're raising sort of collectively. And basically, I've just been lucky. People have been sort of sponsoring me as I go along. So although I haven't sort of completed my challenge, you know, I've raised over 1,000 so far. and it's taking forever, and you know, I have no idea when I'll actually finally get to do an 80, my BE80, but I'm sort of plodding along and working away and making sort of progress.
I like that. It's a little bit like an open university course, isn't it, really? You just keep going, and you know, when you achieve that, which you will, you can do it in your own time, which I think's even better, because we're all so busy that it's very easy when we don't have any confidence to kind of push our dreams aside a little bit, because it's a little bit, we get a little bit of anxiety when you're not that confident of doing something, so it's easier to bypass it, whilst this is just there so that when you get time you can pop into it and have a little go at something else, and you will achieve that. I can't wait for you to do the 80, because it'll be I just think it'll be such a great sense of achievement, especially when things take a little bit longer, I think.
Exactly, and life gets in the way, doesn't it? We all have those times when work's really busy, or our health's not great, or we've got family things. And, you know, I think sometimes we put the pressure on ourselves, don't we? Or, you know, sometimes people say, oh, well, I'm not doing as well as so-and-so. And it's like, well, it's all in our own time, you know, all in our own way. You know, we shouldn't judge ourselves against other people. We've got to do what's right for us and for our whole.
Absolutely. What have you taken away from the Wobbleberry Challenge that if you could pass on to other people, you would?
I think small steps, think about what you want to achieve, what really matters to you, which is not necessarily what other people think of as success. You know, so for me, one of the biggest successes and parts of my training toward the Wobbleberry Challenge has been, you know, hacking confidently solo. You know, that was a bit tricky at first with Bob, and now it's just one of the huge great pleasures of my life. And I know it sounds a bit, maybe it sounds a bit over top, but it sort of is. And I think, you know, small steps, working back from what you want to achieve, being true to yourself, not what other people think, but also get support. You know, I've been incredibly lucky to meet some wonderful friends, to got a great trainer. You know, the Wobbleberry community is so supportive. It's so lovely. It's the best of the horse world. And, you know, just find those positive people to kind of be there when you need it.
That's really lovely. Thank you. Can you I'm thinking now about riding blackjack. I hate hacking by myself, mainly because of it's the fear that I've had a few accidents over the years. I'm going to come off, hurt myself, no one's going to find me, and I might die, you know. Not being dramatic at all there, Indra, but those are the concerns. So how did you get from, you know, not feeling confident to hacking Bob to now going out once a week by yourself in any weather and really enjoying that time together?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I can really relate to what you said. I mean, the number of times I've came off Oscar and the anxiety, the tears, the fear, which of course then made him nap and tense. And then I went in a similar cycle with Bob for a while. So I can really relate to that. And I'm sure others can too. I did it sort of small steps again, really. You know, I took help from friends who walked out on foot. So sometimes just, you know, 5-10 minutes around the first field. If they were picking particularly nappy, both with Bob and Oscar, occasionally walked out in hand and then got on off a tree or a block and walked and then hacked back. And regular. Mm. I think for me, having to do it every week, and now it's just become normal for us. But I had to make sure that I, every week, made sure I went out on my own and didn't sort of succumb to the temptation of hacking out with somebody else. So to just add a little bit of drop of confidence to that jar each time. And also sort of using kind of techniques, I guess, from sports psychology, thinking, why do I think that? What's actually comparing that with the reality of what's happened, what I learned from it, what I'd do differently, how I'd manage, you know, particular situations, and just sort of trying to sort of think it through. But again, small steps, you know, not forcing myself to go out for a whole hour, and, you know, getting help, you know, when people offer to walk out on foot, saying yes, please.
You made me think, actually, there's a local lady, and she's called Amy as well, actually, and she's so lovely, and she has a field by herself, and we met through Facebook, and she also has a similar issue of, you know, not liking hacking by herself. So we've agreed that we're going to go out together, and I'll walk with her at some point, and she'll walk with me, but the weather's been so bad, we literally haven't got round to it, but that was quite nice. We will do it, maybe not this weekend, in March, definitely. I'm going to go and walk with her, and maybe it's finding someone else that's in the same position and you can help each other out and make a friend at the same time. One thing that I did manage to do, which made such a difference to my confidence, is that I'd never got off my horse hacking before. Always felt that you were safer on the horse than off the horse. But actually my anxiety goes down. I feel braver when I'm off blackjack, which is ridiculous. But I almost think that, you know, which doesn't really make sense, but I think it's because for so long we didn't ride, so we did a lot of in-hand work, so he responds really well to me on the ground. So that helps, because walking out a little bit, rather than feeling the pressure for having to ride, they can get confidence from you being with them as well. I think that was a huge difference for me, because the fear was if I fell off, I can't get back on. Well, if you get off and on and off and on throughout the ride, you get used to that, and then that fear goes. Well, it did for me anyway.
No, absolutely. And I used to get off Oscar much more. I don't get off Bob very often, but I used to get off Oscar quite a lot, particularly if I felt I was tensing and then not breathing. And I found he got confidence then when I was sort of at his side and more relaxed. So, yeah, I think sometimes we sort of beat ourselves up, don't we? Oh, you know, you mustn't get off, you know, it's not. And actually, you've just got to do what works for you and your horse, haven't you?
Well, I was always taught that if you get off your horse, then you're teaching the horse that behaviour is okay, rather than pushing them through it or giving them confidence. Or actually, so let me give you an example. Blackjack will freeze if he's afraid of something. If he sees a big tractor, the ears go. In fact, if he sees people ahead of him that weren't there before, his ears go forward. He freezes and he panics. But he doesn't panic and spin and run. He just freezes and won't move. So I can try and move him forward. If I put pressure on him whilst riding, he'll then start to walk backwards. Whilst if I get off and lead him through like a friend would and say, it's okay, we're fine, he then relaxes and walks through. So in that scenario, I don't think I'm going to be giving him any negativity by getting off him. If anything, it's to give him more confidence. However, if we're out on our own and we see other horses and they're going in an opposite direction, he can't cope with that and he needs to go with them, and that's when he'll spin and run. And in that scenario, I would stay on him and, you know, try and help him go in the different direction. And I think if I was to get off him at that point, he'd probably say, hey, you know, this is gonna happen each time, I'll just spin and run more often, which is one of the biggest fears ever, isn't it? How did you overcome some of your concerns with Bob? What were they, and how did you deal with them?
I mean, it was getting help from friends. We had a funny period as well where I couldn't get a saddle to fit him and he was a bit sore. So we had about 3 months where he and I would just go out on a lunge line. We'd just basically go for walks. And I think that helped us, actually. And I learnt to long line and things like that. But also, I think I started to realise, a friend of mine once said to me when I'd taken Oscar somewhere and it was really stressful. And she said to me, "You do know it's you, don't you?" Really stuck with me. And I realised, both with Bob and Oscar, and actually Oscar, until he got injured last year, I found myself getting off him less and less, because in those situations where he would freeze, I realised I could, if I breathe and soften my hands and didn't flap with my legs, which is what I was doing, you know, or I was doing the opposite of them, except I was definitely flapping with my legs, it got easier. I'd give him a moment. I'd sort of slow things down instead of, you know, I'd keep a lid on my adrenaline and just breathe. And because it always seems longer, I think, just when these things happen. And actually, weirdly, Oscar, working through things with Oscar, I think just gave me a lot more confidence with Bob. And actually, Oscar became my sort of Mr. Reliable, really, and in a weird way sort of helped build my confidence and helped me with Bob, which was a bit of a surprise, actually, given our history and his reputation. But I love him to bits. At that point, he was just my go-to.
And is he a companion now for Bob?
No, I haven't given up getting back on Oscar because of his arthritis. If I can get back on him, it would help him. If I can't, that's not great news, to be honest. So we'll see. They have a funny relationship. Oscar's very dominant, you know, he's very much, you know, number one, and it's all on his terms. But they do sort of room and talk to each other. But Oscar is definitely, you know, puts Bob in his place, which is not a huge amount of fun, I think, for Bob. Oscar will make sure he's always number one.
Well, he was your number one, so I don't blame him for wanting to be at the top of the pecking order.
He still is, to be honest.
When did you start the Wobbleberry Challenge? How long have you been doing it for?
I think it was, I keep thinking it's sort of 2 or 3 years, but I think it might have been at the end of 2016. It's been quite a long time. But then I had 3 months the year after with no saddle for Bob, in the midst of the summer, and then the year after that I was off for a while because I got kicked in the chest by Bob.
Oh my gosh.
And as I said, I've sort of realized that I have to go at my own pace. You know, I tried to sort of run too fast probably about 2017, and that didn't really work for me. Quite a long time now.
But it's almost like a life change, isn't it, really?
It is. And credit to Sally and Julia who you know, dreamed up the idea and set it up in the first place. And I finally was lucky enough to meet them in person at Burley last year, which I went to for the first time. And, you know, they did such a huge amount. I think they were overwhelmed by the response, and they did such a huge amount of work to get it going for us all. But I just met some of the most amazing, lovely people through doing it.
And your job, Indra, you've got a really highly powerful and stressful role. You know, Director General for Children, Social Care, Social Mobility and Disadvantage at the Department of Education. That, to me, enough is like, that's a pretty intense role. To then find time, one, to horse ride in itself. But I see from your job, and I hope that you can explain a little bit more, is this working with children and disadvantaged children? Is there anything that you take from the horses that you've learned from your own horse experiences that have maybe helped you with your role as Director General?
The role of the civil service is to serve and support whoever the elected government of the day is. And I'm part of the central government department that is responsible for the sort of overall framework, the funding, the performance of the system that is delivered mostly by local authorities and some amazing professionals and social workers working really hard around the country, teachers who work with children with special educational needs and children who aren't in mainstream school, who are in supported alternative schooling and so forth. So part of my job is really to think about how can we help them do their job, and working, supporting whoever's been elected to deliver their priorities. So whether it's improving the performance of local children's services or making sure there's enough specialist school provision and so forth. So it's a huge, huge privilege, and I meet some amazing people in the course of my work. And horses, it's quite interesting. I think for a while, horses were a sort of my hinterland, if you like, my sort of escape from work, because of course horses don't really care what day you've had in the office. You know, you can't have a conversation with them about policy or what's been happening, and actually that's rather lovely. You have to be in the moment and you have to sort of focus on them, and they use a different part of your mind, and there's a physicality to it that you don't necessarily get if you're kind of in an office job and in lots of meetings and so forth. So, but also, you know, it's been wonderful to see, and I've had the privilege to visit places like Shiloh Inn in Bootle in Liverpool, and Ebony in Brixton, and I haven't been able to go to the Urban Equestrian yet, but how people and children and young people, but also adults, benefit from just spending time with these incredible, incredible creatures who, it's a huge privilege, you know, what they give us, how patient they are with us, how tolerant they are, is remarkable. And seeing how horses, you know, I think horses have helped me, and seeing how they help others, I think it's just wonderful. And also, I think, you know, I didn't start riding till I was in my 40s. And I think there was a bit of me grew up, you know, swallowing the line that horses weren't for the likes of me, despite the fact that my uncle had, you know, show jumped as a boy in Warwickshire. You know, I slightly bought the horses for a different class of people. So it can feel a bit like a quite an exclusive world. And of course, when you get to know people and you get involved, it's not at all. But I think the more we can do to encourage people and to support people who wouldn't necessarily have the chance or have the means and opportunity to kind of experience the, you know, the joy of horses, the better. You know, I watched a class of primary school kids in Liverpool who were coming to Shiloh Inn for a few weeks because as a reward for good attendance, and they were just you know, again, you know, you talked about the excitement in my voice earlier, you know, the joy and the confidence of them kind of interacting and getting to know horses and talking about their horses, you know, they were just flourishing. And I think the more we can do in the horse world to just encourage people having that privilege, I think, and that opportunity, the better.
Oh, Indra, I totally agree with you. This is why I'd make an awful riding school coach, because I'd just give it for free to everybody. I'd be like, yeah, come and have a go, you know. But I do agree with you. And I think if each of us, so what I do is I try and invite local kids to come and meet the horses, learn a little bit while we're grooming them, and just spend a little bit of time with them. And obviously I can't do that for everybody, but you know, the odd people I try and help. And I think if each of us can help introduce one person and give them that opportunity to spend time with horses, then we've each helped one person. And I think, okay, we have 150,000 people listening to the podcast right now. 150,000 people. If you just help one person, we are growing the industry by 150,000 people. So, you know, there seems to be a theme this year from all my guests, which is, one, we need to be more supportive. We need to help each other. And two, we need to be more inclusive. And I think it's a great ethos to have for 2020.
Definitely. And even small things that I try, if I see a family with kids out in the woods and I'm hacking, I always stop and say hello. And because Bobby's got a big mane and feathers and he's, you know, very pretty skewbald, you know, and the look of wonder on these kids' faces, even the tiny top, you just think, oh, you know, even if there's just one. But I became a great aunt about a year ago, but my poor nephew and his wife have been deluged every opportunity with horse presents. I'm determined to indoctrinate Lexi as well. I don't know if it'll work. They may not thank me for that later.
Yeah. Oh, well, congratulations, Indra, and thank you for sharing about Wobbleberry and how we can get involved. Do you know the website?
I do, yeah, www.wobbleberries.com.
Perfect. So we can log on, sign up, and yeah, follow their story. I presume they're on Facebook, and I know they're on Twitter and Instagram too. So, yeah. And we can raise money at the same time. Congratulations on raising £1,000. I'll donate for you. If anybody else wants to donate, how can they do that?
Well, if you look up Indra Morris on Just Giving, and my page will come up there.
Thanks, Indra. Good luck.
And on Instagram as well, as Indra_Wobbleberry. And Oscar's on Twitter at Henson Hall.
Is he? Has he got his own Twitter profile?
He has.
Bless him. Well, we'll follow that. Indra, thank you so much.
Thank you. Lovely talking to you. All the best.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, you can catch previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk, or you can listen on all your favourite podcasting platforms, including Google Podcasts. Just hit subscribe, and they automatically go down to your mobile phone every time I release a new episode. You can hear some of the episodes from this year are Jessie Campbell and Georgie Strang. It was really interesting talking to those two about their eventing career. The first episode of this year, I spoke to Laura Cutter from the Equestrian Sponsorship Hub. So she gave some great advice on if you're looking to secure sponsorship, or if you're a brand that maybe is looking for a brand ambassador. I have more awesome guests coming up this year, so check in next week. You'll be able to see the modern day nomads. Sound interesting? I'll speak to you next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.